You just realized your business needed to hire someone yesterday. How can you find amazing candidates fast? Easy. Just use Indeed. Stop struggling to get your job posts seen on other job sites. With Indeed sponsored jobs, your post jumps to the top of the page for your relevant candidates, so you can reach the people you want faster. According to Indeed data, sponsored jobs posted directly on Indeed have 45% more applications than non-sponsored jobs. Don't wait any longer. Speed up your hiring right now with Indeed. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/PODKATZ12. Just go to Indeed.com/PODKATZ12 right now and support our show by saying you heard about Indeed on this podcast. Terms and conditions apply. Hiring? Indeed is all you need.
At Emory University, we are guided by a shared purpose and a spirit of collaboration. Students here push each other to think creatively and work together because we believe different perspectives lead to new ideas. We know that Emory's mission to create, preserve, teach, and apply knowledge in the service of humanity takes all of us. We do together better. Learn more at emory.edu.
Choo-choo indeed! Welcome to the first of two special episodes of the DLC podcast, your downloadable commentary for the week. Your commentary, of course, this week about the convention, E3, the biggest week in video games. We've got coverage of the big E3 press conferences. I'm Jeff Cannata. Joining me, as always, is my friend slash co-host slash nemesis, Christian Spicer. Hello, Christian.
Hey, Jeff. I have purple hair. You can see it. My lighting here is not the best, but I went full bleach, purple.
Nice.
Because of everybody donating to St. Jude. So thank you for doing that. And the proof is in the purple pudding.
It's awesome. We are recording much later tonight. It is Sunday night. I just got home from Bethesda's press conference. I spent all day at E3 today, EA's press conference yesterday. We're going to talk about those press conferences. It's a special episode, not our usual episode. We may have a guest that joins us partway through. We were going to have a guest, and the communication has broken down because it is late in the evening. But we have so much to get through. We do have a sponsor this episode. This episode is brought to you by Casper. But again, this is not your usual DLC with our usual segments. It's going to be all about the press conferences. We're going to step through all the press conferences that have happened so far. EA, Microsoft, Xbox, and Bethesda. And then tomorrow night, we will be doing this again to catch up on all of the rest of the press conferences. Ubisoft, PC, Square Enix, and Sony. So be sure, if you're not subscribed, subscribe to the show, because we've got a lot to get through. So let's get started right now. Fire up that hype train and get rolling. E3 started on Saturday this year with the EA press conference. This is EA Play, which is actually technically not part of E3. It's actually at a completely different venue here in Los Angeles. They took over part of Hollywood and built their whole situation that's open to the public for free. And they had a press conference and a press day. And let's talk about the things that they brought up. First of all, we should mention that our friend and friend of the show, Andre Renee, hosted the press conference alongside another friend of the show, Don Fubar himself, Jose Sanchez. And those two folks, I thought, did a fantastic job. Kudos to Andrea for being so charming and fun and full of life. I just thought she did a fantastic job.
Yeah, they need to lock her down for next year
for sure,
and several more events, and then use her more next year, because she was fantastic when she was on, and I, in my opinion, was not on enough. I think
I
they
agree.
Could call it E-Andrea Play.
Nice. Well year. Done. I agree. Underutilized. There was a large section of the middle of the show where she just didn't make any appearances, and I just thought the show was so much better when she was a part of it. So let's talk about the things they talked about. I took some notes here, and we'll try to step through as far as what they showed. Start off with Battlefield 5 multiplayer, which Battlefield 5 looks good. Destructibility looks good. We had the big Battlefield 5 event, the big unveiling, what, a week or two ago? And we talked about it at length on the show, so we don't need to spend too much time on it, but I thought it looked strong.
Yeah, yes, it looks the same, right? Like
the destructibility looks good, I think. The engine looks very, very nice as usual. I think the animation system looks really good. It looks like a solid game.
They showed so much of that already at its own reveal, and then what they revealed new about the game at this conference, it's Royale mode. They didn't talk about some of the larger plans for the game in terms of, there wasn't a lot of new information presented at their press conference, so it kind of felt like, yeah, it looks like that.
Right.
I think made it feel a little lackluster, and then I think there's still just a little bit of fatigue and uneasiness. I know they're saying a lot of the right things, but then if like the premium package, or what, not the premium package, what like the what are they called?
There's like
sports bucks. There's some other form of currency for customization. So people are still, I think people are still a little unsure about the game and what it's going to be.
Certainly it seems like all of these Battle Royale announcements are, they do all feel very cobbled together at the last minute. There's not a lot to show yet. These companies are all saying we're going to have Battle Royale in our game, Call of Duty, Battlefield, Battlefield. They don't have anything to show, and it seems like these are all just sort of being thrown in the games at the last minute. It's going to be interesting to see how these types of games handle that mode, but it certainly seems like that's a requirement at this point for any first-person shooter franchise.
I'll tell you what, if you're a developer and you're looking for people, I would be snapping up any boss key devs that are still available, because I think they proved their chops in terms of quality of like animation, control, all that stuff with Lawbreakers while it wasn't a hit. And then they put together, if that was true and they got their Battle Royale game out in 4 months, you know what I mean? Yeah. Like every company trying to add one of these should be calling up former boss key people and being like, hey, you got 2 months. What can you do?
Yeah. Yeah. They then transitioned to FIFA and showed new FIFA stuff. I'm not a FIFA guy. I don't think you're a FIFA guy. We're not really qualified to comment on it, but more FIFA.
Yeah, I think the include, you know, what they're showing there is more, right? It's they're giving you FIFA, the World Cup content in 2018 for free. Then they're expanding it with the Premier League Cup for next year's play. And so like these annual games, I think are hard to constantly add to and tinker with and toy with. But it looks like it has something for fans to get excited about that is new and different. And it still is very pretty.
Yeah. No mention of that narrative mode that I think had been the new hotness in the last few years, but maybe that'll still be a part of it, but I didn't hear them mention it. I thought that was interesting. And then we had this odd moment in the audience with Vince Campella from Respawn. I don't know why they chose to do that in the audience. It felt like maybe they were trying to make it seem like, oh, he just happens to be here. Maybe Andrea will get him to say something. But it was obviously so planned and so canned that it just seemed like an odd thing not to just bring him out on stage. But I think they wanted it to seem more casual, like he didn't have anything to actually show, but they wanted to say something about the Star Wars game that Respawn is making. And they announced the title, which is Jedi Fallen Order, and the fact that it is coming between episodes 3 and 4, set that time period when all the Jedi are being eradicated, and that you will play as a Jedi and you get to use a lightsaber. But other than that, we don't know much until next year's E3, which Vince seemed to indicate will be a big coming out party for that game. And then that game will eventually launch in fall of 2019, supposedly, unless it gets delayed. I'm excited. I love Respawn. I really think that's a very strong studio. You and I were we went gaga over Titanfall 2. And so I'm excited to see what they do with a Star Wars game. But it seemed like an odd moment for the press conference.
Yeah, I think it was just we had to say something. We have a captive audience. People are curious about this. Let's say something. But yeah, I think it was weird. I think In terms of just from a presentation standpoint, I think just having a trailer and a placeholder logo that seems to be very acceptable.
Yeah.
Starting like last year, 2 years ago, and going forward with other companies that we'll also talk about later today. I think that approach would have, you know, played a little better after they talked about Battlefront 2, a glitch approach or something, and be like, oh yeah, and also, and then it's like, cuts to Vince is out there on stage being like, there are other ways to have sold it. My favorite part of that, though, is I really felt like he had a hat on that he wanted to wear, and it did not get media approval. He had like just, it was like a, it looked like a very new blank black baseball cap. Someone tweeted at me like, what do you mean? He's just joining the MCU.
Yeah, right.
All
yeah,
those
like
characters.
They swapped it out for this. Like, you can't wear that, but I'm wearing a hat. Okay, wear this one then. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, it was odd to then transition into Battlefront 2. You're right. I think it would have worked stronger if it had been flip-flopped where you had the Battlefield 2 stuff and then you go, oh, yeah, also get excited for next year. But this one felt like, well, we can't show you this, so here's the Star Wars game we have to apologize for. It just felt poorly constructed as a theatrical moment. But I actually thought the stuff they talked about with regard to Battlefield 2 – sorry, I keep doing that. Battlefront 2.
It's their
Battlefield
fault.
And Battlefront. I get them. I always do that. I do that with GameSpot and GameStop too. I always could say the wrong one. But I actually thought the stuff they talked about with regard to Clone Wars DLC and new characters and how they really feel like they believe in the game and they need to reinvigorate it because they didn't start strong. I thought the messaging all was pretty good. It felt like a weird placement after a Star Wars game that sounded really exciting. It was like, but we have this one. Sorry. You know, I don't know.
Yeah. I don't know who pulled the shortest straw to, you know, how they decided who came out to talk about that. Cause that's an uncomfortable position. And it's what a lot of companies are doing right now also, right? It's the Wells Fargo. We lost your trust, but trust us. Or like Facebook. Yeah. We messed up, but not anymore. Like
right. That's
kind of the theme of a lot of big companies for 2018. It's a hard position. It's a game they clearly think that there's, you know, more in and that the community can get excited about. But, they also spend so much of their conference talking around how that game was a mistake. It's just weird when like the opening part of your conference is like, none of this stuff you hate. We learned our lesson. And here's this guy to talk about that game that you hated, but now it's better. We're sorry. It's weird. It's weird.
It is weird. And I think it's necessary, and I just think there's a better way to handle all that stuff. And all these corporate apologies start to feel a little disingenuous at a certain point, but I guess that's a different topic. It just seemed like an odd moment, but I do think that I hope that, you know, Battlefront 2 eventually becomes the game we all wanted it to be. I'm not playing it, but I hope people are. I think that then led into what I found to be really the high point of the whole conference for me, which was showing Sea of Solitude, which is that EA game that we predicted in our prediction show last week that would be sort of their incubator, you know, title. And this is a game that they are not directly producing. It's an independently produced game, but they're helping get the word out on it. Sea of Solitude. Interestingly, Cornelia Gephardt, who is the developer that was on stage to show it, who very charming, very real, very honest. Anthony Carboni and I actually interviewed her 2 years ago at PAX 2016 when she was still working on this game and looking for a publisher. She was at PAX interviewing with publishers to try to find who would publish it. And we played an early version of the game and she showed it to us and we talked to her. I think you can still find that on Carboni's YouTube channel.
I remember that. I walked by you guys. You guys were very high on it even 2 years ago.
Yes. Well, mostly as a result of her. She's so authentic and she really believes in this project, and it's about more than just being a video game. It really is, I think, very personal for her. As she said, it's a game about loneliness as sort of expressed through a video game. And I think it's really beautiful. I think it really resonated with a lot of people in the show. And I'm so glad to see her in this kind of position. I hope it doesn't blow up and become, bigger than it should be, you know, in the sort of No Man's Sky unraveled way that sometimes these things can become snowballs that overwhelm these developers who are not used to that kind of white hot spotlight. But I certainly am glad the game is getting more attention, and I think a lot of people were really impressed with what they saw.
Yeah, it looks beautiful. I'm still not exactly sure what type of game it is. I got a little Inside vibe from it, where you're kind of running from these red-eyed monsters, or you're trying to escape, and these, you have a lot of these just making the jump by the seat of your pant moment, but also open loneliness exploration. So I'm curious to see, you know, what 2 hours with the game feels like, but in terms of a sizzle and a presentation, it, you know, struck all the right notes of being beautiful, stylized, and then also seeming very personal, and having a developer that was speaking from the heart and not, let's do it, you know.
Yeah. And like I said, having met her, like, that was not a put on. That's the person that I met 2 years ago. And she was just, you know, this very passionate developer who was working with a very tiny team. I think there was three of them making the game at that point. And she was at PAX, like, shopping it around, trying to get some money to finish it. And I'm just so glad that she has managed to find that. And kudos to EA for these kinds of games to, you know, really fill out what is a franchise heavy slate for them. Like the fact that they're building in new IP and finding these small projects to bolster, I think is a good thing for them to be doing.
Yeah.
And I'm not sure if it was around there that we saw Unraveled 2, but Unraveled 2 is a game that you can play right now. So there's no real much reason to talk about it, but I'm glad Unraveled is still continuing, and it seems like a really beautiful game. I'm excited to download it myself and try it after E3 is over.
Yeah, I remember the first game was also beautiful. I feel like this, the idea of it's out now is kind of this moment that has resonated with developers or these presentations over the past few years. And I'm curious for listeners and people that aren't at E3, if this is cool and it's like a little game like Unraveled coming, and I don't mean that negatively about the game, but like an indie game like Unraveled coming out in the middle of E3, is that something that is good because it's like, it got a lot of exposure, so now I'm going to go download and play it? Or is it bad because you kind of forget about it? Websites and podcasts don't really spend time talking about it. We're not going to get a review of it done for at least a week until one of us can spend time with it. I'm always curious how that approach works, because I think the first game was beautiful and had some really cool gameplay ideas. I think ultimately it missed the mark more than it hit it in terms of its complexity as a platformer. But this version, I think with co-op, looks like it could be really strong. And I'm curious if, it's going to get the time it deserves, or if we mention it now and then we kind of move on from it.
Yeah. I think it's an interesting gambit to release a game. It's a popular thing because you have all these eyeballs and people are like clamoring for cool new stuff to play. And it's like, oh, here's something cool new stuff right now. Go download it. I think that's probably a pretty cool thing for people watching at home, but you do miss out on all of the press talking about your game because everybody that would review your game is doing something else this week. So, I think it's an interesting gamble. We saw quick shots of NBA Live 19 and Madden 19, got some people out on stage. Those games, they were sort of light on details as to new features or new reasons to buy them, but I guess just the pure momentum of these sports franchises sell themselves.
Yeah, I think NBA was just, we're still doing it. You know, good for them too, because that franchise has had a hard time, and NBA 2K is incredible year after year. They had problems, I guess if it was 2 years ago, 3 years ago, and continuing last year with some of their microtransaction issues. But the on-the-court basketball of 2K's NBA game has been phenomenal. And EA's NBA Live, or whatever they've tried to call it over the last, you know, almost a decade now, has had a lot of problems. So I think for this one to come out and be shown so prominently with a splashy trailer, you know, shows a level of confidence in it. And they gave it a release date, day and date with 2K. So they're in it, right?
Yeah.
And then Madden, yeah, they spent more time, I feel like, touting its esports-ness, you know, with Juju and I forget the esport player's name.
Yeah.
But they spent a lot of time on that and less time on, like, it has the narrative feature in it, but that wasn't a big part of their press conference. They didn't spend time on that. They didn't talk about what the new move would, you know, if they're adding a new juke or quarterback vision, like things like that, that usually spend time with. It was just, here's the game. It looks pretty. It's football. What are you going to do?
Yeah. I was waiting for them to tell me what new systems. Yeah, new systems have been improved in this.
Oh, Madden. PC. That was the new system they improved.
Yeah, I guess so. I guess so.
For Madden.
But, you know, it is what it is, and people are going to buy it. It's the only NFL game on the block. So what else are you going to buy if you want NFL in your,
yeah,
in your life? And then we had a very odd moment where some shoutcasters were brought on stage, and then two very popular streamers started playing a mobile game.
What they're known for streaming.
Right. Right. Clash of Clans fellas. We got a very rudimentary description of how the game works. And then they played it at length as it was shoutcast. And then after all of that, we saw this mobile game played and we saw these three control points fought over, and it was very long and drawn out. And we saw an entire match with these two guys, although, you know, not that long of a match in the grand scheme. It's a pretty quick playing game, but still we saw it in completion. And then after it was over, hey, it's a Command and Conquer game. It's Command and Conquer mobile game. It's Command and Conquer Rivals. Weird, weird way to do that. I don't know why you would ever want to show something and then have that be something that nobody would associate with a very popular franchise. And it's like, hey, bet you didn't realize this is part of a popular franchise. It's like, well, isn't that bad that we wouldn't think this was part of a popular franchise? Wouldn't you want it to be iconic to that franchise? It seems like such an odd way to do it. It's like, I want to reveal what you just saw was Command and Conquer. It's like, that's terrible. You want to say, yeah, what you're about to see is Command and Conquer. How cool is this next step for the Command and Conquer franchise?
Is that, I don't know. I think it's a difficult position. So I want to step through a little bit of this. I have a few thoughts, but in that regard, imagine if they had a Command and Conquer logo hit the screen. Everybody's like, yeah, like a beloved franchise. It's back, baby. And they're like, and to show it off, these two guys who play Clash, which is like a huge, and you're like, wait, what? And then they're like, and it's a mobile. And it's 1v1.
But that's not how you do it. You don't, I mean, that's what we saw Microsoft do with Gears of War, but, which we'll get to. But that's not how you do it. You don't show the big Command and Conquer logo. You go, the Command and Conquer franchise has been gone for a long, long time, and we're bringing it back, but in a way that we've never done it before. You know, you say something like that where it's, temper your expectations. It's like, this is different. This is a new, new step for the franchise. Command and Conquer is coming to mobile when anybody can play it. You know, it just seems like an odd thing to be like, you just watch an entire match of a thing. You have no idea what it is. Oh, guess what? It's a thing that you should know what it is, but you couldn't, there's no way for you to know because it doesn't look anything like that. It just seems like an odd, I don't know, really, I think poorly handled, but also a game that it doesn't look very fun to me. So on top of that, even regardless of how they did the messaging, I think I would have come away from watching it like, that didn't look very fun to me.
I'm curious what its monetization is. I think it's easy to make fun of mobile games, but I've certainly enjoyed my share of them.
Yeah.
And I'm excited about one we'll talk about later. I just don't want to break our format for people keeping track of what conference we're in.
Yeah.
And I think it could be, you know, very popular, but I'm curious what the monetization is. I'm curious how it's sold. I'm curious, in terms of it, real time 1v1, you know, connections. It's not a first person shooter, certainly, so it doesn't require the best of connection, but Fortnite and stuff like that works on mobile. But just in terms of showing a full match of an RTS, it was so bizarre versus just that trailer they had was fantastic with like the CG characters battling it out in the desert, and then it cut to game footage. Like, that's all we needed. And then you have a dev or Andrea walk on stage and sell the high points and then move on. It was really, really weird.
Yeah.
And I think anytime you present a game like that showing weird, stilted, overly long gameplay, like you're able to edit.
Yeah. Yeah, I agree. Not a strong moment. And really, as you said, way too much time spent on that, I think, for what it ended up being. But the big game that they rested a lot of their laurels on was Anthem. And that was the game I was most excited about coming into the conference. They handled this in a really interesting way, too. They brought Andrea back on stage and three of the developers, from BioWare, and including Corey Hudson. And they sat down for an extended sort of casual discussion about the game, stepping us through some of the systems. We found out new details about Anthem. We got to see a gameplay trailer and more footage of the game. We found out there are four of these javelin suits that you'll be able to wear. You're not restricted to one. It's not like a class system. You can actually own all four of them. Your character can. That it is a true, you know, cooperative, open world, mission-based shooter. They gave lip service to the fact that it is mixing the BioWare style of storytelling and decision and narrative with this persistent multiplayer progression loot system. But nothing that they showed really emphasized that aspect of it. That's one of the things I predicted last week, or was hoping to see last week when we were talking about it, that it really would take the Destiny model and add a BioWare level of narrative polish. And they gave lip service to that, but we didn't really ever see that in action. I also got to see more of the mission that they showed behind closed doors. They were showing the full playthrough of the mission, including the menu system and stuff. But I'm curious what you came away thinking of Anthem.
I think it is gorgeous. I'm assuming the version that we get to play will look something like that. I think they did a good job in terms of popping numbers off of people. You know, it's
very satisfying thing to see numbers pop off of people.
Yeah, it's closer to Destiny than it is Borderlands, but it's moved toward Borderlands away from Destiny. Like combo. I don't know what's comboing when they were doing that, but you're like, cool.
Yeah, no, I agree 100% on that point. Like they kept saying, well, behind closed doors, they were giving a little more detail about some of the loot systems and the fact that these characters were outfitted with legendary versions of some of the things, and they were going to do cool combos. But I had no sense of how they initiated that combo, or what the combo was telling me was a combo, or even what cool special weapons they had. It seemed like they were just shooting each other. There was a guy with a flamethrower, and that was cool. But there was a guy with a ice grenade at one point. But other than that, it didn't feel like there were cool special abilities or ways in which those combos happened. It just felt like shooting to me.
Yeah, so that's... So I'll say one other thing that I liked about the game before I talk about some reservations that I have on it. One other thing that I really liked about it is if it is this, you know, loot grind, customization, tweak out your mechs or javelins anyway, which way you want. I think third person Destiny gets me excited.
Yeah, because you get to see all those cool things that you've looted and right. Customized. Yeah, yeah. I mean, in Destiny, I get to see it in menus, basically.
Or when I dance, and then then I end up dancing too much because I want to show off my stuff.
Right.
So I really like that. I like that, you know, the air to land, you know, what they showed last year to see where you kind of, your javelin is, you know, more mobile than otherwise. I think that looks really cool. And I like the class types in terms of that being your suit, I think was really cool. So I think there's stuff to get excited about. The thing, my reservations are, I agree with you, Jeff. It looked very shootery. They talked about there's going to be this story and it's going to be BioWare and we're going to have all this stuff, but Bungie, I'm okay with it being shooty because they have made some of the best shooters ever up until that point in terms of like the control and feel.
Yeah.
BioWare hasn't, and I hope to be impressed, but I'm just not confident that's what I want from them. What I want from them is storytelling and going on, getting a companion and finding all of that cool stuff. And so I'm concerned that what they're leaning into is not BioWare's strengths. And so I'm not sure, how great it's going to be. But also, and I'm not sure which way I fall on this, February is sooner than I thought.
Yeah.
And does that mean, what version of Anthem do you think we get in February? You know, like they kept saying the story can be expanded. We can add things.
Yeah.
I felt like they were saying, don't worry. There's more.
Well, I think it's one of those things that, you know, these games of service, and that was the plan from the outset, is that it's this thing that's continually evolving, just like Destiny is. There's new, DLC, and there's new updates, and there's new story bits. I think that's the plan. I did see the game being played in real time in front of me with four people. I'm pretty sure they were playing on, I know they were playing on PCs, and I'm pretty sure those PCs had 1080 Ti's in them. So take from that what you will as far as where the game is. But it looked really, really beautiful. It rendered in real time, on that big screen that I was looking at. I didn't get a chance to actually get hands on myself, but I did watch people play it and they were playing it live. And yeah, it looks real pretty. The one thing that was cool is that two of the players that were playing in the match that I saw both had the same suit. They were both the Juggernaut, I think it's called, the big heavy mech mm-hmm. one, but they were wildly different looking. They had completely different, cosmetic things and completely different weapon, loadouts is the word I was looking for. And that was cool. It was cool to see how different the same suit can look and feel. Like one was faster and had a jet on the back, and the other one had like big, Gatling gun on its arm. And I thought that was neat. They showed how loot drops in the game, but they must have disabled any kind of notification system, because every time they picked up the loot, it didn't tell you what they were picking up. So there was no sense of what the loot is, whether it's like bits and bobs for your suit or if it's more than that. I'm very curious as to how all that loadout system works and how different you can continue to make things and how personalized and what you're actually looting. Are you looting a new gun? Are you looting the ability to augment a very static set of guns? What is it? They showed the menu system. The game is very much like Destiny in the sense that you are compiling a fire team, or whatever they're going to call their version of a fire team, before you start. And then you jump into a map that has various quests available to it, and you go to those things. And I mean, it's Destiny. It is really Destiny-like. But I agree with you. Third-person Destiny is already a step up. And third-person Destiny, where I get to play basically Iron Man flying around, that's pretty compelling. I was just very disappointed not to see that story layer that I was hoping for. And even in the behind-closed-door stuff where you see the beginning of the mission being accepted, you are having some dialogue, but it feels very static. It feels very much like more like a cutscene to start the mission, than anything else. And it's really odd in a third person game where everything else is first person. Like when you're in you have this really cool mobile base that's a big walker. So the walker moves around the map evidently, but that's your base. And you go inside that, and that's where your javelin suit hangs out. That's a cool idea to have a base that's a walker. I think it's awesome. And all the people are hanging out inside that, and you talk to them, but it's all in first person, which is so weird that you're in first person until you play the game, and then the game is in third person. I just think that's strange. But it's gorgeous. The character models in that sequence are really highly detailed, as you saw from some of the other trailers. But there's no like dialogue options. There was no – at least not what they showed. Maybe there is that stuff in the game, but it didn't really seem to have any bioawareness to that level of interaction.
Yeah, maybe they're just not ready to show that yet, because I feel like the stuff, the replayable, grindable, lootable stuff isn't the thing where you want to have to work through a 20-minute conversation to get to or play over and over and over again, right? Like they're separate play styles that can exist in one game, but I think that they have to be sectioned off appropriately, because otherwise you're like, oh, well, I want to run this again. Either the narrative gives you a reason why you can run it again and you don't go through that same decision tree, but then isn't the experience pretty different if you're not going through those conversations? Or you kind of have your loot repeat, you know, go save this anthem or whatever it is and come back, and then you have your story that kind of moves you through the world.
Yeah. Darth Tithis in the chat asked if they were rehearsed BioWare reps playing. Yes, they were. He says if they were rehearsed, then it's entirely possible that the demo was held together with toothpicks and bubblegum. Certainly is possible. I happen to know some press were given the ability to play the game hands-on. A lot of the E3 judges were allowed to play it. So I don't think that's the case. It certainly seemed like, yes, they were rehearsed, but I don't think it was smoke and mirrors. It really does seem like a playable game that is robust and ready to go. So I don't have that suspicion, but I did come away from it not as hyped as the dream of what that game could be was last year. I really was blown away by the trailer they showed last year. This year, it seems like that same game, but it just really feels like third-person Destiny, which is fun. It doesn't appear to be more than that, which is what I was hoping for.
Well, if it can be third-person Destiny the Taken King, or third-person Destiny Forsaken, what Forsaken looks to be, that sounds like a great game to me. I'm just worried it's going to be Destiny.
Yeah. Here's hoping. And what a crazy February we're going to have if that holds to its date.
Someone's blinking. There's like five games that are all the same day right now. It's going to be.
February is the new fall, I guess. Crazy. Let's move on now. Oh, before we do that, EA overall, I found it to be a very uneven press conference, some highlights, but ultimately pretty consistent with EA in the sense that that's kind of what they do every year, right? There's nothing particularly surprising, but also nothing, you know, horrible. It's never a top tier press conference in my opinion, but they show some solid things.
It was super serviceable. Last year's, I think, was better because Anthem was like a whoa moment.
Yeah.
And this year it didn't elevate on that. I think from a presentation standpoint, there's things that they can learn. I think using Andrea or someone like her more, some of the devs are probably very talented developers, weren't great at talking about their development. And I also think don't cut to the audience just because the script says hold for applause when no one in the audience is clapping and you pan to one guy who looks like he just killed himself. Like,
oh God,
some of those audience shots are just brutal.
Not a good reference in a week where two very.
No, I apologize. I didn't mean to make light of that. That is on me. I apologize.
Yeah.
I misspoke. But just there's a way to do it, right? Sell it. And that's not about the video games they showed, but it's about how they presented them. And I would say that it was a step down from last year's show. Even though she already was my friend, I do think Andrea was probably the high point of their presentation this year.
I agree. Yeah, she was fantastic. Okay, so we'll move on. We have so much to get through with Microsoft and Bethesda. So stick around, but we do want to thank our sponsor, Casper. I'm not going to be sleeping much this week with E3 because I'm going to be constantly at the show doing podcasts, coming home late. But thank goodness Casper exists to give me a good night's sleep. I got a Casper several years ago. It was so cool how it came to my house. In its kind of cool packaging. They deliver it right to your house. They give you this neat little opener. You pop it open. It unfolds like magic in your house. Casper is a mattress, a sleep brand that makes expertly designed products to help you get the best rest one night at a time. And these mattresses are really high quality, but they won't break your bank. The Casper, what they are able to do is cut out the middleman, cut out those big box mattress stores, cut out the salespeople that are pushy and make you uncomfortable every time you want to try to buy a mattress in a big box store. Nobody likes buying a mattress. There's nobody that loves going to a mattress store. That's why Casper's so great, because you can do it all online. It's easy. And the experts at Casper really created a quality sleep surface that cradles your natural geometry in all the right places. I can speak to that. It's pretty amazing. And you spend a third of your life sleeping, so you should at least be comfortable there. Casper has become very popular. They have over 20,000 reviews with an average of 4.8 stars across Casper, Amazon, and Google. They're becoming the internet's favorite mattress. And they have several different mattresses, the Wave and the Essential. The Wave features a patent-pending premium support system to mirror the natural shape of your body. And the Essential has streamlined design at a price that won't keep you up at night. Free shipping and returns in the US and Canada. Excuse me. And you can be sure of your purchase with Casper because of their 100-night risk-free sleep on it trial. That's 100 nights. 100 nights you can sleep on a Casper mattress before making up your mind. That's completely risk-free. Sleep on the mattress. Check it out. If you don't like it, they'll come to your house and pick it up. Take it away. It's pretty amazing. And the best part is, with our promo code, if you go to casper.com/DLC. Name my own show. Casper.com/DLC. You'll get $50 towards select mattresses by visiting casper.com/DLC and then using the promo code DLC at checkout. Terms and conditions apply, but give it a shot. Upgrade your sleep. Rest easy, especially after a very busy E3 week. Casper.com/DLC and that promo code DLC. All right, Christian, let's dive into Microsoft. There's so much to get through here. It's an insane
50 games, 18 world exclusives or whatever.
Yeah, they rattled off those stats at the beginning, and it was a little bewildering. I found the pace of this conference to be, at least at the first half of it, to be almost too much to handle. It was there were games that they would introduce and then beyond to the next one, and I was not even quite sure what I had seen yet. And we talked about this in our E3 episode last week, our preview of E3, and I talked about how Microsoft has really settled into this in the last 2 to 3 years.
Oh,
this
wait.
Template.
We can get to it with Microsoft, but we forgot EA Premiere, Origin Premiere. So let's
connect
to that dot when we get back. When we get to it in Microsoft, which we will.
It definitely seems to be a theme that's running, and I know it's very much something that you have wanted for a while. So yeah, we'll definitely talk about that. So Microsoft has landed on this template of just really being, for the most part, a trailer show. You know, it's just trailer after trailer after trailer after trailer with almost no human beings on stage. I think there were a few more this year than even last year, but large sections of the show is just a trailer and then the next trailer and then the next trailer, which I think is kind of crowd pleasing and a lot of what people want. But at a certain point, I felt like I need a little context of what I'm even looking at here with some of these games. Let's talk about what they showed. They started the show very, very strongly, of course, with their premier franchise, Halo, and showed a trailer that I don't think anybody realized was Halo for a while. It showed animals, a rhinoceros and deer running across very beautiful landscape, and then landed on the Master Chief helmet and the Halo music. I thought it was a pretty darn cool trailer. And then the logo, Halo Infinite. And then we were off to something else, and I was like, well, but what is Halo Infinite?
I pictured like, yeah, and here's David Ellis or Tim Longo, or here's someone to talk about this game. And there was none of that.
Yeah, it was pretty wild that we got a Halo announcement of a new game without even understanding, like, is this just a multiplayer game? Halo Infinite certainly implies a multiplayer game that you can play infinitely, but maybe it's just a snappy title for Halo 6. My theory is that this is how Halo does Destiny, with a persistent world that you can level up, and they will continue upgrading and adding more content to over time. But we certainly have no idea if that's the case. We don't know anything about it other than the name and that weird enigmatic trailer. So,
and that Master Chief's going to go kill some humans finally. Isn't that what it looked like to me? They're like those humans in those rings. Then it pans up at Master Chief's on a cliff, and I was like, oh, damn. Master Chief's going to go kill some humans.
Yeah. Yeah, it was an odd thing. I mean, it was a stirring way to start the show.
Yeah.
But I felt – I couldn't help but feel a little unfulfilled on – like, am I supposed to be excited for this? How far off are we from it? What even is it? What is it?
Go ahead.
I was going to say, if it had come up and said Halo 6, I at least would have an idea of what game it is. But because it's called Halo Infinite, it feels like it's not a mainline Halo game, and therefore a lot of question marks as to what this thing even is.
Yeah, I think they seem to give a little tidbit as to what it is. Just something like, this is our playground going forward, where you'll see epic campaigns and the hallmark multiplayer the series is known for, plus something new. We'll be talking about it more
in a year,
in 2019 or whatever. Just something. But right now, it's like, it's called Halo Infinite because that's the number of questions you have about the game, where it's just it looked gorgeous, it looked cool. But it's just kind of like Microsoft saying, like, Halo, we still make that. And we're like, yeah, we know. But they're like, but did you see it?
Yeah.
It's weird.
Shudder Munster in the chat brings up, I think the key point here is that it almost was a reveal for this new engine. I think the key point is, hey, we built a new Halo engine. Look how pretty it is. It was real pretty.
It was real pretty.
So clearly that is what the Halo franchise will be built on going forward. And I'm sure we can see more of that later. But as far as a game announcement, it felt a little hollow. Halo was hollow. But it's cool to start a press conference off with Halo. It felt like, if you're shooting that bullet first, there's going to be some bigger stuff coming later. And there certainly was. They kept things rolling by moving to Ori and the Will of the Wisps. I know you're a big Ori fan. What did you think of what they showed of Will of the Wisps?
It looks gorgeous. I was just a little sad that it had a 2019 at the end of it. I kept hoping it was sooner, but I take your time. That kind of game is intricate in terms of how they overlap and where you go with the map and what the powers are and when you can get to certain places. So I'd rather have them nail it than have it come out half baked. But that and, Guacamelee 2, I feel like I'm ready for both of them already. And I don't know exactly when Guacamelee is coming out, but I was hoping that Ori would be a play it in September kind of game, but it looks stunning. Absolutely stunning.
Gorgeous. Just beautiful. Yeah. I didn't fall in love with Ori, the first one, as much as you did, but man, it is just a gorgeous looking game for sure. And then we got a real shocker, a real big, genuine reveal of a game nobody knew about. This is published by Activision and it's from Software. It's called Sekiro Shadows Die Twice. It's been a long day, guys. My mouth isn't working in concert with my brain anymore. Anyway, this looks, it's from Software, so it does seem to have a little bit of Souls DNA, but it certainly doesn't look like a Souls game. It's got traversal and, it's got some samurai aesthetic that looks really cool. What did you make of this?
Yeah, I think it has a decent amount of Souls DNA in it. Those huge monsters coming out and kind of the parry, block, dash. Like, it wasn't getting super involved with the fight mechanic, but it looked like there was a long fight, right? It's not you're going to run up on this big bad and take it down. I mean, this as a compliment. I don't know. I don't think it matters what genre From Software tackles. They make my nightmares. they made feudal Japan just seem horrific. His like arm is, even the protagonist, it's like just oozing with style. Something that I think would give Tim Burton nightmares. And I think it's really cool that they keep finding new genres or new locales to do this and give their own unique spin on, whether it was, medieval or fantasy, Victorian or kind of steampunky, and now with ancient Japan or whatever and samurai. And good for Xbox for going out and getting this game. I think Bloodborne was a big get for Sony the year it came out. That was one of those ones that was like, Xbox doesn't have this, blah blah blah. And this is big. I know it's Activision, so it's everywhere at some point, right? But
yeah, you'd think. I don't think this one said exclusive in front of it, but I can't keep track of which ones were exclusive and which weren't.
But it's a big conference get, kind of like the first time they showed Final Fantasy, and they now did with Kingdom Hearts spoiler in a few minutes.
Yeah.
I think those are big press conference moments.
Yeah, I was hanging out with our friend Anthony Taormina all day, and he and I were sitting next to each other for this. And he is a big Souls fan, and he said the B team at From Software really is the B team, and that there's a lot of drop off in quality between the A team and the B team. So he's hoping this isn't the B team game. So we'll see. I don't have enough firsthand knowledge to agree or disagree with that, but it'll be interesting. It certainly looks a little different. I felt like a faster pace than you usually see from a From Software game. And I liked the sort of traversal stuff. The grappling hook looked really neat, and I don't know, looks like a cool game.
Yeah.
After that, Todd Howard came out on stage and discussed Fallout 76, which of course we'll talk much more about during the Bethesda part of our show, which will be last. Criso in the chat said it's crazy that Todd revealed Fallout 76 at the Microsoft conference. I mean, we already knew it was happening, and it wasn't a reveal, but it was pretty cool that they were out there at the Microsoft conference showing that game and talking about their history on Microsoft consoles.
That was Fallout 4 as well, though, if I remember correctly. They did the same thing. They showed a little bit of it, like a trailer, and then gave you in-depth later in the night.
Yeah, and I came away from that moment thinking, is this going to be – we had heard all these rumors about it being a survival game. Is this going to be like a mainline Fallout role-playing game? Because he was talking about it being bigger than Fallout 4 and all this stuff, and I was like, boy, it sure sounds like this is the New Vegas to 4, or, you know, as what New Vegas was to 3, this is to 4. But, of course, we found out later exactly what that is, and we'll get to that. After the Fallout 76 was an adorable-looking game, a game that seemed very charming, called Captain Spirit. This is from who is it? The people that made what's the name of that game? Brain's not working.
Life is Strange.
Yes. People who made Life is Strange. And this, to me, I immediately thought, this is like the movie version of Where the Wild Things Are, but done as a video game. It looked really interesting.
Yeah, I got whatever the step right before teary-eyed is for this story. Like, yeah. I was like, oh, this looks nice. And it was like, they hit you with a line of like, your mom would have loved to see this. And I was like, oh, crap, his mom's dead. And then it's like he's an alcohol, like struggling with it, and the kid, he's getting bullied at school. I'm like, damn, this game looks great. It looks great.
Yeah,
I'm excited for it.
It does. I love stuff that's really doing this with the medium. You know, that's really trying to express something that's a little bit different. You know, you get your 15th post-apocalyptic shooty shoot, and these kinds of things, I think, stand out. Shogun Do in the chat said, or Shogun D said, David Cage presents Captain Spirit. It did look a little bit like that, but of course, you know, that's what these games are, and I'm all for it. Tell me a cool story with a video game. Make it interactive. I'm into it. And then we saw the latest update on Crackdown 3, which, man. I want to love Crackdown 3, and I'm getting farther and farther away from that. Crackdown 3 for 2 years was like my most anticipated E3 game because I love the first Crackdown. But this game looks a little clunky. It looks like it's chasing something that I don't think it should be chasing, this kind of weird, over-the-top humor thing that I think we've seen before with Saints Row, and it's not, I don't know. What did you think of Crackdown 3?
Yeah, I mean, I enjoyed Agents of Mayhem. I know it did not get reviewed well, but right now, Crackdown 3 looks to me like a little less inspired version of Agents of Mayhem. It just, they didn't show anything new or exciting about it. And I think they were really trying to get people like, my car turns into a tank. Woo! Like, I love Terry Crews. Who doesn't like Terry Crews? He could just stand next to me and yell, woo! Every 5 minutes. I'd be like, it was a good day.
yeah.
But I just didn't, you didn't see large enemy count coming at you, like crowd control, kind of the way the first game was known for, which I think now we look back on and it's like, oh, those were five enemies. But back when you were first playing that game, I remember it felt overwhelming and really cool. It didn't really highlight a bunch of destructibility, which isn't, I don't know. And I don't know. It didn't show me a huge skill tree as I was unlocking my orbs and seeing how my character would change. I did that montage of the gun kind of morphing and changing to all these different types of things. But, you know, February 2019 hopefully gives them time to make it that game. Cause I think the franchise certainly can still be awesome. In terms of like, when you think about what is Crackdown, it could be a great game and hopefully this gets there. But I think by focusing on Terry Crews, like, I feel like Crackdown is a game that could lean heavily into customization and costumes and outfit and dress up, and they didn't show that aspect of the game. It feels a little lost to me right now.
Yeah, I'm so excited. We got, I think, our friend Sharif Jackson from Spawn On Me just joined us. Hey, Sharif.
Hey, how are you doing?
Good, man. I know it's very late where you are. I appreciate you taking the time to hang out with us and talk a little E3 press conferences.
Yeah, I was watching all the conferences. I was telling you how hype I was, and I was so hyped that I nodded off.
No, I know it's very late. We're doing this much later than normal, and I'm so glad that you're able to join us and weigh in. Let's rewind a little bit and just get your general take on EA's press conference. Chris and I have stepped through all the games there, but I'd love to get your general feeling on what EA had to show.
I thought it was okay. I was expecting a little more from specifically NBA Live.
Mm-hmm.
And Madden as well. I mean, Madden on PC is a big deal, but I really thought they were going to at least mention some of the new features that they were going to have in the new game, and perhaps an advancement on the story mode that, you know, that that I really enjoyed from last year as well. They really doubled down a lot on FIFA, which was cool. I knew it was going to be a lot of Anthem stuff. And a lot of people didn't like to kind of sit down chat, Andrea did with the devs. I thought it was pretty cool. Yeah. I kind of like just hearing what devs think. But I do agree that I wish that they would have kind of just walked through a level. I think that like that probably would have, been a lot cooler to me for a press conference. I almost wish that to satisfy everybody, they walk through a level and then said like, you know, like go to our website for, you know, detailed insight from Casey Hudson and the crew. I think that might have worked a little better to please more people. But overall, I thought it was okay. I'm still hyped for Anthem, but I don't know if it turned the table for anyone that wasn't already hyped for it. And I think that's what they're going to need to do, as it gets closer to release.
Yeah. It's interesting because behind closed doors, they were showing basically what you're saying. They basically walked us through a whole level and had live commentary as we were stepping through it. And they were pointing out things and they played it from start to finish. They started in a menu and went through, they skipped ahead in one section, but I think that may have been stronger. It's interesting. So we've kind of progressed through the Xbox conference up to Crackdown 3. What did you think of Crackdown 3?
I mean, kind of the same I thought as last year, which was now my thought is a little different because last year, like my thought was they need to push this back, and even then, I don't know if it's worth $60 to.
What about $10 a month?
I know that's exactly what I was about to say. I was like, I'm glad it's on Game Pass, because that's going to get me to actually check it out. And maybe it'll be a diamond in the rough, I want to be optimistic about this game, but so far, every single thing I've seen about it has been completely unappealing.
I think it's funny that it goes from being a potential system seller type exclusive to a diamond in the rough, I think you're right.
I think it was forced to be a system seller.
Yeah.
Like obviously originally Crackdown was never intended to be huge. And I think it kind of got put in that position just because of, the date of Microsoft's kind of first party game, like development this generation. And I'm like, I don't know if it can hang there from what I've seen. Like, I think it'll be a good game. But I think with all this pressure on it as to, really be something that, that straight up Microsoft fans can sort of lord over the heads of everybody, I don't know if it's going to be that kind of game. Hopefully they just completely turn the tables on us and I'm amazed by it. But so far I've just been like, okay.
Yeah. I agree. If I was in charge of the Crackdown franchise, I would say let's de-emphasize the sort of fodder enemies and the gunplay and really make a orb finding puzzle game. It's all about traversal. It's all about getting orbs so you can level up so you can get more orbs. And there's orbs that you can see on the top of things.
But they have that game. It's called Orby in the Blind Forest, and it's great.
Fair enough. I would make it like this big open world platformer that you get an orb that lets you level up to get to the better orbs. And maybe there still is some car stuff and some shooting, but I think that I would de-emphasize that and de-emphasize explosions and all that stuff and really double down on what made that first game so fun, which was this city that felt like it had secrets in every nook and cranny, and it was so fun exploring it.
But yeah,
that would be my take.
I agree with you.
All right, so then we saw a quick shot of Nier Automata Become As Gods Edition, which is pretty cool. That's coming to Xbox. And then extended gameplay for Metro Exodus. I have to say, I got a little post-apocalyptic shooter fatigue this year. There's a lot of really excellent-looking ones, including Metro Exodus. But, man, so many games where it's like the first few shots of the trailer are –
But they're all coming the same day next year, Jeff, so you'll be fine.
The trailer shows, you know, a destroyed husk of a building that's all gray and overgrown with vegetation. It's just like we've seen that over and over and over. Nevertheless, what did you think of Metro Exodus, Sharif?
I mean, I thought it was great. I mean, I agree that there are a lot of fatigue, but I still think that no one quite does it like Metro. I still think they have a unique take on it. And I think it's one of those games that I feel like as graphic technology improves, I always want to see a new Metro, because what they do with lighting and what they do with environment and like sound, I always find to be amazing. So
yeah.
I'm almost looking forward to like a Metro to see how far they can push the tech, as much as I'm looking forward to like the story and the gameplay and stuff.
Did you think that the footage they showed this year lived up to last year's? Because I've heard some people comment that maybe it looked like it had downgraded slightly visually.
Not really. I mean, not that I noticed. I mean, I didn't like, you know, adjust my eyes to the 60 frames a second so I could catch every frame. So maybe it looked a little worse, but I don't think significantly. I don't think it was like a Watch Dogs kind of situation or anything like that.
Yeah.
So I don't think so.
Christian, what did you think of Metro?
I think it looks great. It's no one dev's fault that they're making a game in a similar genre or setting as other devs. I think if you're fatigued on that, I don't know if you're going to want to watch Sony's press conference.
I know, right?
I have a feeling. But I think it looks great. Those games in the past, they have always been a little too Witcher 2, if that makes any sense. And I'm hoping that Exodus is a little more Witcher 3, where they were always just a little too cumbersome in control or resource management, or they prioritized their game system a little more over general playability. And I think the Witcher franchise did a great job catering to my tastes going from 2 to 3. And I'm hoping that Metro does something similar, going into Exodus. But like Sharif said, those games have always been beautiful and really pushed the envelope, especially for what they're getting out of consoles. Frame rate be damned sometimes, but, I'm excited. I'm excited to see more of Exodus.
Yeah. It looks really cool. And I think you might be right about that comparison to The Witcher 3. I think it does look a little more, I don't know, westernized, you know, and not so quite so European and simmy. Which is, I think, the similarity there between those, that comparison. The opposite of something that has fatigue is the next game, which was shown, which is Kingdom Hearts. And they showed the long rumored Frozen world, as well as some other new Disney worlds. This game just looks like a delight. It looks like a delight to me, and I can't wait to play it.
Yeah, I'm still not sure exactly how. Again, it's a press conference, so they're not going to be like, "Here's the tweaks we've made to combat. Those rumors you read are true," or like this in-depth look. But it looks stunning. Also, I think it's another game where the graphic style that they chose works really well across all of the Disney franchises, where Wreck-It Ralph looks as you would expect him to look, but also fits that universe. It's not just him ripped from the movie, along with Anna and Elsa as well. And I think it's going to be a lot of fun. And again, having this on a Microsoft press conference was a big get. And I think Phil, you know, rightfully said as much, because it's not a place where you'd expect to see that much time given to it and had never been on their console before.
That was the moment, by the way, in the conference when Phil was standing right next to me. I don't know if everybody saw me, but.
Well, I saw you and took a picture of you to send to you, and I was hoping I could see you check your text while I was watching you.
Yeah, he just was strolled down where I was sitting on the aisle. And I got a lot of people are like, oh, I think I saw you on the thing. I was like, yeah, Phil was right there. Anyway, what do you think of Kingdom Hearts? I feel like this is a game for you, Sharif.
Yeah, I mean, it should be. But for some reason, I've never gotten into them.
Really? Oh, wow.
Yeah, I mean, it's I don't know what it is. I love Disney. I love these kind of games. And for some reason, Kingdom Hearts never sunk its hooks in me. Now, I taught a gaming class this past semester, and I had one student that was really into Kingdom Hearts. And he kind of got me kind of like, man, maybe I should kind of revisit these games. So I think this might be a good time to jump in. I think I might jump in on this one because I believe it's coming out like right in January of 2019. So
yeah, it looks so
yeah,
good.
I mean, I agree. I mean, it looks great. You know, and I heard some people saying, oh, like the story is very convoluted of the first two, and like you need to play them all to, you know, really I get mean, out of this third one. And I'm like, whatever, I'll just jump in. I'll read a wiki or something.
Yeah, I don't think you're gonna miss out on it. I mean, it's fun hanging out with Donald Duck and Goofy, you know. It's fun. It's like,
well,
I think you're gonna
get. I think it's got a much better and more in-depth story. And granted, I haven't played all. There's only two games in the series, but yet there are also 20. if that makes any sense, where things kind of have tweaked and evolved with some of the stuff. But yeah. It has a better story than it has any right or need to. It could literally just be, Disney's invaded. Ah, save it. And they take it sometimes some dark places, especially where it's like, hey, you loved us when you were five. By the way, this character sucks now.
Yeah. Some stuff we'll just kind of skip over. There is so much to talk about. We could spend 4 hours on this. Sea of Thieves DLC is coming. Looks like some cool stuff for fans of that game. More Battlefield 5 was shown. A story trailer from the single player content. And then we got to Forza Horizon 4 with Seasons. They dropped Leaves on Me in the auditorium. And Seasons are coming to Forza Horizon 4. It's a big open world where every other driver, I guess drivatars aren't a thing anymore. We don't need drivatars because we have actual humans. So you have a big open world where everyone is a real person that you encounter. And you can all be, you're all in the same persistent world, driving even across wild distances on the map. And the seasons change the map in big drastic ways that impact how you drive. There was a friggin' hovercraft shown at a certain point, and nobody mentioned the fact that a hovercraft was in the trailer. Christian, I know you are a huge Forza Horizon fan. What did you think of this one?
You mean by Microsoft Internal Studios Playground Games?
Yeah, well, you're skipping ahead, but yes.
This, I thought it looked really great. I thought the presentation was great. I think the way they mentioned 60 frames per second is a big win for the Horizon series that has always dabbled in 30. I think it's only for the X or PC you get that 60 frame boost. And I think what they're doing in terms of the seasons approach is really cool, where, you know, before they had the Winter Mountain expansion and then Hot Wheels for Forza Horizon 3. And I think both of those are great expansions. But to have this map that is the same, but yet very different depending on the season in which you play it adds for really cool moments and gets people checking into the game throughout the course of the year, right? That's kind of an incentive. I wonder if you can, you know, fake out your clock.
Well, is that how it works? I mean, I didn't get a sense that it's based on the actual season that you're living through. I felt like it was like, it's, you know, winter, and then in 5 minutes from now, it'll be spring.
I haven't looked things up, but I don't think it's that quick. I think it might not be like actual real seasons, but it's like my understanding was it's to get you tuned into the game, you know, from time to time. It's like it's winter right now. Come play the winter tracks.
Interesting.
Yeah, that's what I thought it was, too. I thought it was seasons, like how, you know, a game like Overwatch has seasons, except they're going to vary them by weather. That was my impression.
Well, we'll have to find out. I'll be talking to those guys tomorrow, so maybe I'll ask that question. But it does look pretty. I mean, it looks gorgeous for sure.
It looks amazing.
And motorcycles, and what are the weird? There's some weird vehicles in there, no? That aren't usually in a Forza game. Am I wrong, Christian?
They've got They've had some fun. I mean, Horizon's always been the fun series. So
yeah.
I think it's the best racer of this generation has been the Horizon series. And this one looks like to evolve it well. So yeah.
And then you kind of teased this a little bit, but the next thing was the discussion of the fact that Microsoft is getting serious about expanding its first party library stable of developers. They are doubling their number of first party studios. They've acquired a number of them, including the developer for Forza Horizon, and some other notable developers, developer of State of Decay, the developer of We Happy Few, the developer Ninja Theory, the developer of the
recent. Huge.
Yeah, Ninja Theory for me is the standout one. I think.
Imagine. Can I speculate for a moment?
Sure.
So you have Playground and Ninja Theory, and now you have Fable, and those are the two studios working on it. Come on. So like combat from Ninja Theory, open world environment and traversal stuff from Playground. I don't know if they're, I have no inside information as to this other than that Phil basically said that Playground is working on Fable.
Yeah.
But those are studios that you have first party studios and they're able to share resources and stuff. And Ninja Theory did combat for Disney Infinity back in the day and they were one of the studios brought in and I think vastly improved that game from one iteration to the next. And I'm very, very excited with what Ninja Theory could be doing for Xbox.
It is interesting that several of the developers feel like they were already sort of ostensible first party developers anyway. A lot of them were making, I mean, State of Decay was an Xbox exclusive, right? This announcement was a little dulled in the sense of like, well, they're not getting anybody that wasn't already in their stable. But as you said, these are official first parties now. They can share resources. They can share tech. You know, they really are working for Microsoft in a real way. For me, Ninja Theory is the big one. Ninja Theory is a very exciting developer. What they were able to do what's the name of the game?
Soul Sacrifice, Susanna, or something like that.
Yeah. What they were able to do with such a small budget on that game is really quite something. And having maybe the resources of Microsoft behind them, they'll be able to even do bigger and better. So I'm excited for that. My takeaway from this announcement moment is Microsoft understands that Sony is kicking their butt in first-party exclusives, and they are trying to rectify that. But this is just starting. They just acquired these places, and they're not going to have anything for several years. So this is the announcement in lieu of actual first party exclusives.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. This is almost like an announcement for the next generation, you know?
Yeah. Yeah. Senua's Sacrifice is the name of that game. I couldn't think of.
Yeah. Hellblade, I think.
Yeah. Hellblade, Senua's Sacrifice, which is a phenomenal game, gorgeous and high quality. And I think giving them the resources of a Microsoft first party is going to be just very positive for that.
Also, DMC, I'll stand by it. I don't care what they later say that now we're getting a true sequel to Devil May Cry 4. DMC was a great game.
Yeah.
That's also Ninja Theory. They are wizards at combat.
So, yeah. I mean, I think a bright future for Microsoft, but nothing really in the present. But at least they have identified the issue and they seem to be actively pursuing it. Then we got PUBG, we got Tales of Vesperia Remaster, and then we got to what is making a real play for me for a game I'm most excited about in this E3, and that is The Division 2. I was such a huge fan of The Division. I was worried that The Division 2 was going to look very similar. It was going to feel more like an expansion pass. That is
no need to be worried. I'm going to go talk to this guy, see what he's worried. Hold on, Sharif, will you cover the round back?
sure. Just hold on for a sec.
Yeah, I got your six. Copy that. This was clearly a trailer that Ubisoft is like, we gotta do it our way, Microsoft. We're doing it our way. But man, that game looks like I said, I was worried it was just gonna feel like another city, it's gonna look and feel like another urban moment, but this is another city. It is Washington, D.C., but there was like jungle look and it felt so much more organic and interesting. Not a lot of info on specific kinds of new weapons or powers or anything like that, or new progression system. But I am so excited for the Division 2. I expect we'll hear much more about it tomorrow in Ubisoft's press conference, and hopefully hopefully we get some details about how Endgame will work and stuff like that. But yeah, I was really blown away by this trailer.
And characters, like character customization, like that's
It's key. It needs to happen.
I want more than North Face, right? Yeah. I'm greedy.
It needs to happen.
They showed the gun weapon or loadout. I'm gonna change my loadout real quick, and that was impressive. Like it was like a 9x9 or a 3x3, like a 9-row grid. But I thought that was impressive. Sharif, were you a Division 1 fan? I know Jeff loved it.
Oh yeah. I was a big fan of it. It's like one of my most played Steam games, actually, when I was looking
through
Steam library. Yeah. I put in some heavy Division hours. The thing that really stood out to me in the trailer was not only the jungle stuff, but the fact that there was sunlight and water.
Yeah.
Which are two things that are, completely absent from the Division, not for a bad reason, just because, it's in the middle of Manhattan.
Yeah.
And like that to me, I feel like really lets that engine shine. I'm assuming that it's a new engine. I don't think they're just,
I think it's that Snowdrop engine that they've been working on, but yeah, it certainly looked real pretty, and there's that cool sequence with the husk of the airplane, and it just, that game looks awesome. I'm so ready for it.
Yeah. And my hope as, and I know a lot of people have been like saying this as well, is that they take all those positive changes they made, especially up to that 1.8 patch, and they put that stuff in Division 2.
Yeah.
Please don't have a Destiny 2 situation where people are asking for things that were already in the first one in terms of like private matches and that kind of stuff. So
Really hoping
that they can nail that down.
And I'm hoping it was a little wink to problems with the first game too, where they, in that plane encounter, there was an enemy, and in their expert team play, like, I got his armor off, and like you saw armor falling off this big brute, whereas like the first game it was like I shot the guy in a hoodie 400 times. He's still standing,
right?
If they can justify some of those bigger, harder enemies, and like, oh no, this guy has a baseball hat on, he's a level 40.
And then we got this information about fast start, which basically means games start faster when you download them. Cool. I'm not gonna argue with you.
If it works, it's great. It gets us closer to that. You don't realize you're downloading a game.
Yeah. Okay. Cool. Yeah. We got some Game Pass discussion. We did not get your prediction, Christian, which was that gold would go away in favor of Game Pass. But certainly there was a lot of emphasis on Game Pass as far as a service that Microsoft exclusive games are really relying on. Some interesting games being added to Game Pass, which is pretty cool.
Fallout 4.
And I think even more than – what's that?
And the Division, the first one.
Yeah, the first Division. Even more than those games, I was impressed that Elder Scrolls Online is being added to it, because I feel like that is a game that's ongoing and very successful, and it doesn't feel like an older game. It feels like, it's a current game. So that's cool.
I'm curious, as like a PC gamer, I kind of want to do it for the think piece, as lame as that sounds, but it's like, I'm only going to play EA Origins Premier, whatever their one is called, and Game Pass games for like $20 a month or whatever, whatever it is. You get this huge library of PC games. That is super compelling. I know if you guys have an awesome gaming PC, you might want to spend more money on some games that maybe push your hardware graphically a little harder than what you're going to get from those two things. But man, it's really compelling between those two services for, I think it's $20 a month and maybe less if you buy EA for a full year. I'm tempted. I think if I didn't do this show or need to play other stuff, I think you get a lot of gaming hours out of those two services now.
Yeah. And, you mentioned that EA brought this up, Microsoft brought this up, this emphasis on streaming technology where you can stream to any device and play anything anywhere all the time. something you've been talking about a long time, Christian, about wanting that as the future of gaming. Both of these companies, when they brought it up, said, well, we don't really have it working yet. They seemed to indicate that it was like, it's not ready for prime time, but they're working on it, and it's only a matter of time before that seems like a really viable way to play games anywhere you want.
Yeah. It's like Netflix had to get you first sending a disc to your house.
Yeah.
and then they got you the next step where you can just tap your phone and watch it and play it. And I do think that this games, not games as service as currently describing a game like Destiny or something like that, but the service of providing games is someone's going to figure that out and they're going to do it right. And I think EA's acquisition of, I think it was Gamefly's digital service or streaming service is their, you know, big investment in that. I think it's going to shape, you know, the next generation or next frontier of gaming for sure.
There's so much to get to here, guys. It just was this wild pace of just announcement after announcement after announcement. At one point, we even heard that the next generation of Xbox hardware is being worked on. It's like, what? It's just throwing everything at us at once. The Tomb Raider trailer came now. Oh, we got a big ID at Xbox montage, which is like bewildering. Too many games to even keep track of. And then this Tomb Raider trailer, I think, was an excellent trailer. I was really impressed with just how that trailer was put together. That game looks awesome. I'm so ready for that game.
Is she a bad guy, Sharif? Is that what they were saying? Like, she can change time? What was this Two-Face stuff?
I thought it was a good trailer, but at the same time, and this is coming from somebody that absolutely loved Tomb Raider and Rise of the Tomb Raider, I just want to know either how you're going to do what those games did better or if you're going to do something different. I kind of didn't get that sense from the trailer. So I'm kind of, I don't know, third games are always dicey to me, especially when the first two are really good.
Yeah.
You know? So while I want to go in, you know, super, super excited about it, I'm excited, but at the same time, I'm almost preparing myself to be let down. Only not let down because the game is bad, let down because the first two games set such a high bar. That I'm like, how much more can they go unless they, you know, really try something? Like, I thought Rise of Tomb Raider was a masterpiece.
Yeah, it was phenomenal. It was our game of the year that year on the show. And I expect to love this one too. I'm really excited for it.
Yep.
And then they showed a skating game, Session.
Oh, Skate 4?
No, not Skate 4. Not Skate 4.
Session. Skate 4, right?
It looked a lot like Skate 4. I mean, it looked like a lot like Skate. So I guess that's good. You're the skating guy, Christian. What do you think?
I thought it looked great. I mean, it comes down to how it controls. What is it? It looks, it was definitely there to evoke Skate 4, right? And if it does that, I don't care what name they put on it. I thought it looked really cool. At first I was like, oh dang, did somebody make a skate video game where, like, you don't actually skate, you just control the guy on the skateboard with the camera filming his buddy skate?
Wow.
Which I think would be a compelling indie game where it's like, you're the support guy. You can't do the kickflip, but you got the fisheye lens and you can film your friend doing the kickflip.
It's the Pokemon Snap of skating games.
Yeah. And then you yell out, cop! You need to. But I think it looks great. I hope it controls well, because that's how that game will live or die.
Yeah. Sharif, Devil May Cry 5. What do you make of that?
So I tweeted out Devil May Why.
No.
Which is terrible, but I just Yeah, I know that, Christian, I know that before you were really hyping it up. Part 5, right? You said that you liked the DMC, you know, the kind of reboot of it. I really didn't as much. I liked the first four. I didn't like the reboot as much. So I just don't see a reason to go back to Devil May Cry at this point. I think a lot of that is because I've kind of gotten my Devil May Cry-esque fix with the recent, like, Bayonetta games.
Sure.
And, you know, I mean, it's just not, I don't want to say it's not for me, but I think just personally, I think I need a little more time away from it. But I think that it definitely has its audience, but like me personally, I'm not excited for it.
Christian, you're into it?
I mean, I'm going to butcher his name, but you have a series creator coming back to the series after years off. And after, I think, as Sharif accurately points out, the action combat genre has evolved in a big way.
Yeah.
I'm curious to see what his take on that will be. And if he's learned things from Bayonetta and even Nier and some of these other games that have come out that have definitely taken things that they learned from early Devil May Cries and added to. And I think that the trailer had a lot of style to it. I think the girl, was a little too, she reminded me of some of my companions in Far Cry 5. Like, I was like, oh, I hope she's not next to me cursing up a storm the whole time. Yeah. But, I thought the trailer had a style to it that was really cool. And I like that third person action genre. So, you know, I'd be okay. I loved current God of War. I loved it. It's up there with maybe my favorite game this year and up, you know, whatever my top 25 of all time. But I'd also be okay with another God of War, like the old style. So I'm totally okay with an old style Devil May Cry as well.
Then we got Cuphead DLC, a really interesting looking game called Tunic. It looks sort of like a isometric Zelda. Yeah. We got, I'm curious about, what's that?
Zelda with a fox.
Yeah, right. Zelda with a fox, yeah.
Tunic was previewed, I think, last year, too. It looks phenomenal. If I remember correctly, there's no language in it. It's all just like that made-up language, and everything it's, you know what to do is how.
So you're saying that we never find out what the fox say?
I get you. I got you, Dad. I think it looks great. I think it looks great.
On fire tonight.
It's been a long day. What do you think, Sharif, of Jump Force? Best game title ever or worst game title ever?
Well, you know, as far as just the title, I like the title just because it's like anime.
Yeah,
like it's an super anime kind of title.
Yeah.
Like I feel like if it was anything else, I would be like, that's a terrible title.
Jump Force.
Some weird, like, Nintendo game or, like, something.
We got all of the different anime franchises together in one fighting game. What should we call it? Jump Force.
But, like, none of them are known for their jumping.
But there's got to be some reason for it. I don't know.
Maybe it's, like, a deep cut reference. I don't know.
The benefit of the doubt on this.
Yeah. Are you into it? Do you like all these anime franchises? Like, I was sitting next to Anthony Taramino and I turned to him and they were like, a new game from Bandai Namco. And I was like, oh, is this going to be Naruto or Dragon Ball Z? And then it was like, it's both. It's both.
It's everything.
It's everything.
So chat coming through. QWERTY Man saying Jump is the name of the big manga compilation book in Japan. And it's a reference from Shonen Jump, the Magna publisher for all the franchises.
I had no doubt there was some deep cut reference I was missing.
Well, that was called Our Ignorance to the Genre. Yeah.
Still. Weird title. Anyway. So, Sharif, are you into this? Is it cool?
Yeah, I mean, I think it's anime is custom made for these kind of games. Like, supposedly it's going to be like a 3-on-3 tag team fight. So, like, kind of like a Marvel Capcom-ish kind of game. I think it's great. I think, like the characters are there if they do it right. And like Bandai Namco has shown that they can do some like good fighting games. So yeah, I'm about it.
Cool. Yeah. Jump Force. That happened. then Dying Light 2. I don't think anybody had predicted this one, or maybe we knew it was happening. I didn't know it was happening. I didn't see it coming.
Let me check Walmart Canada real quick.
Yeah. I wanted to love Dying Light. I know a lot of people do love Dying Light. I did not love Dying Light. Dying Light 2 looks cool. They showed some really interesting systems with regard to wild choices that affect your environment in really stark ways. And I thought that was kind of neat.
Except they both seemed like bad outcomes.
Well, I mean, it's not called, Happy-Go-Lucky Light. It's called Dying Light.
It's not
Light.
Called Kingdom Hearts 3.
Yeah. It's not called, hey, the dawning of new light. It's great. did you like Dying Light, Sharif?
Yeah. I thought it was okay, you know. Yeah. I was definitely full of zombie fatigue when it came out.
Yeah.
So I was pleasantly surprised when I got into it, because I was expecting just not to enjoy it. I thought it was a okay game. But I was really excited to see this like sequel, because just like you, I was not expecting to see it at all. I always loved like the sort of like parkour mix with the zombie stuff, and I feel like that can only be like elevated in like a sequel. I love like decision based games where like you kind of have to choose right, or hopefully they have some like really good like risk versus reward kind of situations, you know?
Yeah, it looked like it wasn't so clearly like you're either picking the good thing or the bad, that you're either a nice person or a not nice person. It really felt like there's pluses and minuses on both of these situations. You know, you're not getting a great benefit or making it harder for yourself. You're literally making some things harder and some things better either way. So I think that's a kind of a neat push and pull. It's not like there's a clear cut paragon, renegade kind of situation, which I always prefer. It feels like a much more interesting way to go, shades of gray either way.
Yeah.
But yeah, I just can't bring myself to be excited about this. I have a meeting to see it this week, so maybe I'll play it and be more wowed. But the first game I just found to be stifling in a weird way. I don't like games where it's like, you better hurry up because night is falling, and when night falls, everything gets bad. And it's like, oh, I don't like that pressure.
But, not a Minecraft fan, huh?
I guess not. Minecraft is like that. You're right. And then we got a logo for Battletoads. So Battletoads logo, everybody.
I think it's a better logo than Metroid Prime 4. So I want to, you know, if we're just judging logos, yeah, it was a real good logo.
Not as good a logo as Elder Scrolls 6, but, you know, still good.
What, you mean font?
Yeah, yeah.
Sure. At least Starfield had a logo. Elder Scrolls 6 was like, quick, someone type this live type because Todd's about to say
it. And the funniest thing is it won't even be called Elder Scrolls 6. It'll like have its own other title. And
yeah, it'll have a name.
But we're jumping ahead, fellas. So Battletoads had a weird, we knew Battletoads was happening for a while because but it's like weird to even show the logo with nothing else. Weird. Just Cause 4 coming out this year looked like a Just Cause game, looked a lot like a Just Cause game. I really didn't see anything in it that made me think that it couldn't have been footage from Just Cause 3, but
a stable frame rate.
It's like if you had just literally repurposed Just Cause 3 footage, I would not have known. But, you know, people love that franchise too. I've never been a huge fan.
If it has a stable frame rate and is really playable on this generation of consoles, and I think they look to show a little bit more personality, with like the interplay between the characters and the joking and stuff like that, where sometimes Just Cause took itself a little seriously as you were like jetpacking or, you know, parachuting, whipping onto a jet, smashing a jet down. And then it's like, yeah, we did it. It's like, you just threw a 747 into a truck.
Yeah.
A little more recognition of what just happened. Those games could be great. I think if it can nail the tone and again, nail the frame rate, it's kind of like has the potential to be a Ghost Recon Wildlands to the 11 kind of thing. And I like that kind of game a lot.
Yeah. I mean, yes, a lot of people love them. I've just never.
Yeah, it's a really fun sandbox, I think.
Yeah.
You just kind of just mess around with the grappling hook and just go crazy. And, you know, I think another one of those, fine. Okay.
Yeah. And then we got the Gears of War logo, and everybody started going crazy. And then a Funko Pop face popped out of it. And people were like, what? And then we got somebody come on stage to talk about Gears of War Funko Pop version. And then they're like, also, there's going to be a Gears Tactics game, which I guess is XCOM with Gears, which is cool. I like XCOM games, but that's not the Gears of War we all wanted. And it just, it's a weird letdown of the Gears logo and then the Funko Pop thing coming out. It just seemed like, what is this? What even is that game? What's so bizarre? What's going on? And then like, oh yeah, but also Gears 5 is coming. It's Gears 5 and here's a trailer for it. It's like the most weirdly anticlimactic reveal for a very anticipated game I've seen in a while, because they built up this anticipation, they burst the bubble, and then they were like, no, but the bubble's still here, everybody. There's this other, the bubble was always here the whole time.
Oh, Jeff, I forgot to tell you. I owe you some money. It's a penny. You left a penny. Oh, also though. Also, in your car, there's a dollar bill tucked in the back seat.
Oh, that's better. Than...
It's still back there.
That's great.
I think that's kind of... You won the lottery! Also.
Yeah, yeah.
Oh, my God. Exciting turn of fortune. That's
so,
what we're going for.
So what do you think of all this?
Emotional roller coaster.
Yeah, it was a bit of an emotional roller coaster. It was like a Gears of roller coaster. What did you think of the Gears 5 trailer? What did you think of all this Gears news?
I liked Gears 4.
Yeah.
I knew Gears was coming. I actually liked the trailer. I liked how they set up it story wise. Definitely seemed to be a little more serious, which I thought was cool. Because I kind of like Gears the most. I feel like when there's like a lot of heavy stakes. Obviously, it's going to look great. It's going to sound great. I have no doubts about that. And I think Gears is one of those things where I know a lot of people say that Microsoft kind of depends on it too much, but I think they kind of need that to be one of their, you know, pillar franchises. And I'm glad that they are continuing to you know, put resources into it, you know. And yeah, I'm excited for it.
Yeah, it looks really good. And I'm impressed. You know, they clearly seem to be setting up Marcus Fenix's son as the heir apparent to the franchise, and then to zig instead of zagging, and go with this female protagonist, which seems to be the case. I applaud. I'm happy that they're doing that. It seems like a really smart, interesting move, rather than just going with the obvious. So I'm into it. I'm ready to play another Gears game. Looks cool.
Yeah, it looks like they found more story, and I think Kate is a really interesting, you know, I think they feels like they kind of pulled it out of under her armor instead of out of left field, like, this is my grandma's, and you're like, oh, okay, I wish we knew that, I don't know, 20 hours ago after we've been in this conflict together.
Yeah.
But, you know, you got to find new story places, and I think it's an interesting one. They've certainly hinted at this, not even hinted, talked about the prolonged shared world of Locust and human in the past, and if they're able to expand on that in fun ways, I think that's really cool. I thought it was interesting too, like, they painted JD as kind of a jerk, and I think he was kind of a jerk in 4 if he was a little flippant, but then Marcus was there, and I was like, that was such a big moment. They hit him in 4 for such a long part of that game and the marketing leading up to that game. And it was like, he's here. And then this one, it was just like a quick pan, and it was like, and he's here.
Yeah.
He's here.
But you're not going to play as him.
Yeah, probably. JD's still the boss, and you're not going to – and then it's Kate. So I thought that was a little weird in terms of handling their, you know, flagship character for the first 3 games. And then there's that other moment later in the trailer where this huge monster comes out and has these awesome, like, billy club baseball bat things, and the spikes come out, and you're like, oh, what an epic fight. And then it just cuts to
her
you running
it.
Around like, yeah. using it. Yeah.
So, well, I guess you beat him.
Yeah. And I was like, yeah. I know where how that fight goes. Yeah.
That's funny.
But it was beautiful. And I agree with Sharif. It's like, this is a showstopper for the console oftentimes. And also, I think a testament to the coalition getting, you know, they got an excellent remaster of Gears 1 out. Gears 4 was really well made, if not original in the way that some people wanted it to be. And now Gears 5 coming along nicely in a time span in which a lot of other games, AAA games and franchises, have seen 1 or 0 releases.
Yeah. 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 And then, that seemed like it was going to be it for the press conference. And, I was, like I said, I was sitting next to Anthony, and he turned to me. He's like, oh man. No Cyberpunk. I was like, oh no. He's like, haha, it's only going to be a slideshow. There's not really going to show gameplay. And then the interruption, the old MS-DOS prompt, CD, right. Which I thought was cool.
Change directory.
And then what's the password is red. So CD red, the project file that they had to find, CD project red, all of that. So clever. So cool. I'm like bouncing up and down in my seat. And then they show the trailer for Cyberpunk, and E3 just came crumbling down around me. I could not believe it. Looks so badass. My only gripe is that it really seemed, however many years ago when they first showed the Cyberpunk teaser thing, that it seemed that we were going to get a female protagonist which I was kind of expecting. And to see a male protagonist, I was a little bit disappointed in, to be honest. But, oh, the world looks so cool and interesting. I mean, this game, I'm such a fan of CD Projekt Red. I'm such a fan of how they make their games and how they're committed to their games and their ethic and ethos company-wide. And the Witcher games, I love. I just can't imagine this game not being a completely awesome experience. And the universe just looks so different and cool and bizarre. What did you think, Sharif?
Oh, I was blown away.
Yeah.
And that is how you end the conference. Like I was like, wow, you know? And yeah, I mean, I have full faith in CD Projekt Red. And I think that they kind of showed the goods. I mean, like it was just a teaser, obviously, but you know, they left me wanting more, a lot more. And I think that's exactly what it was designed for.
Questions that came to my mind: is it a shooter? I mean, how does the combat work? So many things. The details of which I think we're going to get. I have a big hour-long meeting with CD Projekt Red this week, so I'm sure we will see more of the game in action. But it certainly looks so pretty, so gorgeous. I mean, the car shots and the big open environment shots. Christian, are you coming around and maybe this being game of show? What do you think?
Is it playable? We'll find out.
Big question. We will find out. Yeah.
But it was a heck of a trailer. I think in terms of, like you said, the CD and Project in Red was really cool, and all the stuff that showed up in those flashes that, of course, the internet's going to dissect every little thing. They gave away codes to the complete edition of Witcher 3. They had this whole long, like, letter to fans that was pieced together from it. Like,
so
the game's
going
to come out when it's ready, DRM free. Microtransactions in a single player, get the F out, like all
so
this
good.
Stuff that is just like, what a fun way to include that stuff in a press conference style atmosphere where it's not someone out on stage saying no loot boxes, premium. It was hidden
and
there,
it
of course.
Embraces that hacker ethic and that hacker theme. It's
right.
So rad.
Yeah, of course we're going to find all that stuff. And then the idea that, like, when is the game going to come out? Not till it's ready, which is like, yay, but like,
when's it ready? Yeah.
It's like, find your, whatever you're into the most, whatever it is, like, a beautiful person walking by scantily clad, a beautiful ice cream sundae, whatever you think, whatever it is, a car just freshly waxed, iron suit, whatever it is. Imagine that just being like, and this can be yours. And you're like, yeah. And they're like, not now.
I know. And second year in a row that Microsoft has closed the conference with a really impactful, amazing debut of a really cool game, new IP type of game that isn't theirs. It's a third-party game that's going to be available on lots of other platforms. That's an interesting – I mean, they get the rub by having that be their mic drop moment. Last year it was Anthem, this year Cyberpunk. But kind of weird that they're relying on a game that you can play on your PlayStation and on your PC, no doubt. I don't know.
They have some kind of exclusivity deal, some kind of deal.
They might not. I don't know if CD Projekt Red is the kind of folks that would do that. They have their own, you know, they got GOG. I'm sure it's going to come out on PC day and date with whatever else. It could be, but I think it's more like Microsoft's message seemed to be, we have tons of stuff for you to play. Not a lot of it is exclusive. I mean, they showed some exclusive stuff. But I don't think it compares to Sony's exclusives. It certainly felt like they gave people who already own Xboxes a lot of reason to be excited that they own their Xboxes. But I'm not so sure they convinced anybody that they had to have an Xbox if they didn't already have a console. You know what I mean? Or if they already had a console is what I mean to say.
Yeah, I think it's kind of late in the game for that.
That's true too. That's true. I mean, they basically lip service the fact that they're working on the next one. So hard to convince people to jump into this generation. You know, it's like, well, we're working on the next one.
But so is Sony. I don't know if they'll say it on their press conference that they have also publicly said they're working on their next one. And I think And I don't know how you do it in a flashy presentation like this, but I think why I would tell a friend to buy an Xbox over a PlayStation, it always comes down to look at the exclusives. Are there any that you feel like are must plays? Then it's price. And then the thing that I think if we're depending on how those things break, it's Game Pass. And the fact that you can get an Xbox and Game Pass for $10 a month. And I think Amazon has it on sale right now for less than that. Right now, I say as we're recording this, that could have changed already. And then you get State of Decay, Sea of Thieves, regardless of what I think of those games, two very big games in terms of playability. Fallout 4 now, The Division, as you get excited for The Division 2.
Forza Horizon 4 will be available on it. Gears of War 5 will be available on it when that comes out. I mean, that's
so you're
stuff.
For like right now, whatever it is for an S, $250, $199, $230, you can get that console. And then for $10 a month, which is how much I think it is to have a cellular plan on your Apple Watch Series 3, right? Like less than Netflix. You have all these games to play. It's really compelling. It's just not super sexy because those Microsoft exclusives, the new ones, the Halo and the Gears, we don't know much about yet. And the existing games, it's hard to be like, oh, I can go play The Division right now at a press conference when they're showing The Division 2. But for someone that doesn't have a console yet, I think it's pretty compelling.
Well, let's move on to Bethesda and their press conference. Every year is always interesting because we didn't really know much about it other than Rage 2 and Fallout 76. Now, Rage 2 started off the conference alongside Andrew WK for some reason. they showed more of that game. Do you?
He's fine. Party tip. He's the best.
He's the best.
He did a full out song, man.
He did.
He did not care. That check cleared and he did not phone it in.
No, he didn't phone it in.
Played his heart out. His whole band did too.
Yeah. It was fun. It was real fun. The Rage 2 stuff they showed, I think that game is going to be a blast to play. I really do. It gives me, Bulletstorm vibes. It's like Bulletstorm meets, what am I thinking of? I am so tired right now, guys. I can barely even put a sentence together. But it gives me Bulletstorm vibes of just how wacky and creative the kills are. It seems like it's a sandbox for killing rather than particularly a challenge. It's more like do it with panache and fun rather than, try to survive like a Doom or something. So I think that's really cool. Oh, yeah, no, it's like a mix between Bulletstorm and Mad Max. You know, it's that Mad Max game that I enjoyed so much from Avalanche a few years ago. I don't know. I think that game is going to be really fun to play. I think it's going to be a shallow experience perhaps, but a really fun, just frivolous, wacky, exciting game to play.
Yeah, I think it, there's a lot of questions about it still, but it looked great. They showed variety in the environment just in those kind of snippets where it was kind of jump cutting through areas where, there's different takes, different parts of the barren wasteland and it has color. It's not all just brown dust blowing the way Mad Max, the Avalanche developed Mad Max open world game was. And the upgrading and customization looks cool. And they showed the different types of, at least two enemy factions that you'll be going up against that hopefully will play differently. And I think they did a good job explaining how or why it might feel so differently than the first Rage, where it's a significant time jump, right? Like you were born and grew up in this. You were a kid when this existed. Like all of this world existed when you were born and now you're an adult. Time's passed and here we go. Let's go play.
Yeah. You into it, Sharif?
Yeah. I wish they showed a little more of the driving. Just because that was such a big part of the first Rage. And that's one of the things that I didn't like a lot about the first Rage was I didn't think the driving never felt that. Not that it didn't feel that great. It didn't feel as good as the not driving portions.
Right.
So it was a little unbalanced to me. But one thing that I'm hoping that Rage 2 also does is similar to the Metro series that I talked about earlier, like Rage 1 really pushed the fidelity of graphics a lot. When that game came out, especially like the PC version, like you really needed like a powerful rig to like really run it well.
Yeah. It was a brand new engine at the time. Yeah, that brand new id Tech engine.
Yeah. And like a race shoe, it looked great. It didn't blow me away the way it looked, but the gameplay looked super fun.
Yeah.
So I'm really curious as to if like the final version is going to go again for that like super like fidelity stuff. Or like, you know, or like if it won't, but I like the attitude of it. It was like definitely zany and fun. Didn't seem like it was taking itself too seriously. And, you know, I like games that are like that every once in a while.
Yeah, me too. It seemed like a very distinct new approach from Bethesda this year. Usually they are very focused on games that you are going to play in the next year. They have a very sort of small list of games and they're going to show them to you, but they're not going to talk about anything too far out. And they seem to have made a very big decision to change that tact. We saw Doom, a new Doom game, Doom Eternal, which just got a teaser trailer, no actual gameplay. The devs came out and said, we're working on it. It's going to be cool. We're going to tell you more about it at QuakeCon. So not tons of information, but I know we were all big fans of the Doom reboot. Felt like a new Doom was coming. I think it's a real smart decision for them not to have shown any Doom stuff because it feels like it steps on Rage 2 a little bit because they're both high-octane, quick-paced, kinetic shooters, you know, with demons and mutants and stuff. It feels in the same wheelhouse, and I think it was smart of them to let Rage 2 have that spotlight. But I'm sure we're all excited for a new Doom game to find out more about that. Yeah. Then we got Quake Champions. I don't even know what to say about Quake Champions. Sharif,
it's basically Quake 3. It's like an early access version of Quake. It's like kind of like that. I don't know if you ever played that Unreal tournament that Epic has on.
Yeah, I have. Yeah,
it's like sort of like that. It's like, you know, it's like an alpha version, like a fan made kind of like constantly updated version of the game. I mean, it's fun. I mean, I played around with it a bit.
Yeah.
But I do like
an audience for it.
I do like the fact that they're like basically giving a free week to everybody to like try it out. I think that.
Well, and then I think it's free forever. Didn't they say that too? If you played in this free week, you get to keep playing it for free.
Yeah. Yeah,
and then a real Mac Daddy is saying, Jeff, you are tired and you're also leading this ship, so thank you for doing that and having a list. But I think Doom Eternal.
What did I say? Eternal. What did I call it?
Not Infinite.
Infinite Eternal. Yeah, I apologize. Doom Eternal. I have it written down right in front of me and I can't even read. I am
Sunshine
fading.
Of the Spotless Mind, my friend.
Yeah. Prey, new modes for Prey surprised me, that they're still supporting that game and very robustly. I thought that was pretty darn cool. Although
VR.
Yeah. VR yes. for Prey and Wolfenstein. Oh man. That's awesome.
I mean, so the Prey stuff was some of my favorite parts of this conference.
Yeah.
I totally wasn't expecting it. I was expecting something about Prey 2 maybe, but I was not expecting like DLC like today. And then I wasn't expecting like this prop hunt mode, you know, that they're basically putting in it and then putting that in VR. I was like, I want to try that.
Oh, so, me too. Yeah.
So I'm totally going to reinstall Prey and I'm going to check out this DLC. Absolutely.
Yeah. Really cool that they're supporting VR, continue to support VR. I love the fact that Bethesda's committed to VR. Sounds amazing. It emphasizes the parts of Prey that I found to be less than fun, the very action-y parts. I found the exploration and the sort of more methodical parts to be much more what I liked about the game. But either way, I think it's cool they're supporting the game and continuing to be committed to that franchise. It sounds like I feel like Bethesda really sticks with their franchises. You know, I think that's shown with Rage and with Prey. They support them. I think that's cool. More evidence to that is a new Wolfenstein, which I don't think anybody saw coming. And this sounds really, really cool. It's focused on BJ Blazkowicz's twin daughters. It's set in the 80s. I tweeted at the time that I thought, who would have ever predicted that the Wolfenstein series would be like the most progressive series in gaming?
I know, right?
It's so bizarre, and but very, very cool. And I love that we have these twin girls as protagonists. I'm excited for this. It looks good.
Yeah, and co-op being in the game. And I feel like the only thing, it's like narratively, I'm like, oh man, poor Blazkowiczes. They never win. Like literally, you know, I won't spoil the game because it's not out on Switch yet. But all the things you do in that game and like, wait, you still don't win? The Nazis still take over, have everything? That's depressing.
I love the fact that this is where they're going narratively with that. I mean, I would never have guessed that they would leap to the 80s and talk about the next generation of Blazkowiczes. I think that's so bold. And man, they just take such risks with this franchise. It's kind of counterintuitive, but I love it.
Yeah, I'm curious too. And I don't know, Sharif, if you have seen anything. I don't think they've said anything, but I don't know if this is like a full-fledged game or if this is kind of like after Wolfenstein New One, where the names of them are all lost in my head right now, but they did the one and then they did like the standalone DLC kind of version of it. I'm curious if this is a full-fledged sequel or if this is kind of along those lines of like the $30 to $40 kind of campaign.
Yeah, I was trying to look that up too. I couldn't get anything clear. The fact that they didn't specifically say sequel during the conference.
Yeah.
I know Wolfenstein 2 is a sequel, but the fact that they didn't say like this was Wolfenstein 3,
right,
makes me think that it's probably going to be like an add-on to like a significant add-on to Wolfenstein 2, like in that same engine. You know, like it'll be kind of like a Far Cry Blood Dragon kind of thing.
Yeah.
Just like on the same thing.
It was like, old blood. New Order, old blood, and then New Colossus was Wolfenstein 2.
Yes.
And now this is called Young Blood. So that kind of implies then that it would be, right? If New Order goes to old blood and now they have New Colossus and Young Blood, maybe it's that $40, $30 kind of standalone thing. But
you deciphered the code.
Yeah, you did. And the VR, standalone VR game is called Cyberpilot, which sounds really cool. I can't wait to find out more information about that. Both of those are evidently playable at the booth, so I'll definitely get my face on with both those VR games. And then we got a deep dive. Todd Howard came on stage looking impossibly cool in his leather jacket.
He doesn't age.
That dude's badass. I love that guy, man. He's so cool.
The best.
And we did a deep dive into Fallout 76, which is, in fact, a survival game, sort of a – I mean, it really does feel like Fallout does Destiny. And I know that the Destiny style of game is in vogue right now. We're seeing lots of them. I never would have thought
Fallout – Wait, are we talking Destiny or in vogue? You're throwing all these R&B groups at me.
These are like – the next generation of Destiny games, so you could call them Destiny's Child.
Oh, man.
They just need a little TLC and they'll all shine.
That's right. Don't go chasing waterfalls, Christian. The game looks to be very Destiny-like. I mean, it really is Fallout as a pure shooter. We don't know if there's sort of loot, but there is mention of progression that persists across
no
server.
There's no VATs aiming, right?
Doesn't seem to be any VATs. I can't imagine how they would even make that work in a multiplayer game. It looks gigantic. There's this huge map. It takes place in West Virginia. Sharif, what do you make of all this? Is this a game you want?
I wanted them to do something different. I mean, Fallout 3 and 4 were fairly similar. I enjoyed both. But if 5 was going to be another 3 and 4, I would have, you know, been disappointed, even if it looked great. I don't know how this is going to work out, to be honest. Like, it seems like it is just inviting a whole lot of problems, you know. But if they pull it off, it could be great. And, like, you have to remember that they've had years to look at games like Destiny and the Division to figure out, you know, how players react to, like, a certain things. And, you know, I think they can do this. I think it'll probably have a really rocky start. I think there's obviously going to be some old school Fallout fans that you'll never be able to please with this kind of approach. But I think that given what they've done with Fallout 3 and 4, I think this is a good next step. My only hope is, I know they said that you can play it on your own. I really want to see what the options are for playing kind of solo because...
Yeah.
I definitely have those times where I just want to play a game and I don't want to be in a forever connected, you know, world. And if they say this isn't the game for that, at least I'll have my expectations set and I'll know that's not the game to go to when I'm feeling in that mood. Other than that, I'm super optimistic on that they can pull it off.
In the chat room, Chriso says, playing co-op Fallout is something I've been dreaming of for a long time. Right there with you, Chriso. And then John Reardon says, to be honest, I have never been excited for a Fallout game until now. That sounds like people are excited for it. I don't know, man. A pure shooter Fallout, it seems like a risky endeavor. It's not what I go to Fallout. That's not what I love about Fallout is the shooting. Certainly, it's all the other stuff. And it's going to be interesting to see what that progression really entails. Is it going to be a perks system? Is it going to be some sort of loot? Is it a looter shooter? I don't think the loot in Fallout is particularly attractive or interesting. Like, I'm not excited about getting another outlaw outfit, you know? So I think that would be a tough thing to pull off. Like, you got to make – if you're going to do a looter shooter, you got to make the loot really desirable.
Hey, I'd be excited to get a drop of, like, screws.
Yeah.
And bottle caps.
Yeah, more caps. But it certainly seems to have some base building stuff, some Fortnite-esque base building stuff. And then this idea of these giant nukes that you can launch. And then the nukes aren't just offensive weapons. They literally transform parts of the map to reveal different kinds of resources that you can gather. So it turns normal sections of the map into irradiated post-nuclear areas that allow you to get more valuable resources out of them. I think that's a really clever idea. So there's a lot going for this game. I there's a lot of question marks for me.
Yeah, I think it's smart the way they said. I think they're limiting it to 12 people. If this map is really, you know, four times the size of Fallout 4, it's not Fortnite or PUBG where you're constantly running into other players per se, which I think is nice because you and your party or you solo can go out and play this game. So hopefully there is that Bethesda crafted experience where maybe I'll play for 4 hours and never see anybody. Then they created these nuclear test facilities, I think, to kind of create these choke points that, like you said, they not only are for punishing other players, but you create these valuable resources. So it creates a place that people will want to go to where you're going to run into other real players perhaps. And I think the other thing that's really interesting about it is it has the potential to be a streamer's paradise where Bethesda jank is loved and often streamed for fun, you know, cause like it doesn't break the game. It's like we were looking at one the other day where it's like this guy came off a set of stairs and started swimming, you know, just like through the open world. He was a swim animation kicked in. And I think if you have that with like a persistent world type game or there's potential for griefing, which this certainly has with those nukes. I think it's Bethesda looking at that kind of world and what kind the game landscape we're in today where being one of the top games on Twitch or Mixer, I guess, because for their Xbox partnership, can go a long way. And I think that could sell a lot of copies of this game. And then I think the base building stuff and the customization, if that's there, could you imagine you have this sweet base built and then someone just nukes it?
Yeah.
And they don't even know. They were just doing it to get resources.
Yeah. I was wondering, like, are you just hanging out and then all of a sudden the nuke goes off and you don't even know why or when?
I mean, like, that is what it seemed like.
Yeah.
Brutal. Just brutal.
But, you know, there's got to be some kind of
warning system.
You know, I mean, I know that they mentioned that you kind of have to cooperate with other people that have parts of the code to actually launch a nuke, but still, it just seems like, if they haven't, I'm hoping that they have some kind of thing to, just prevent you from just starting up the game and getting nuked in like 5 minutes.
So, he called it soft core. So if you get nuked, you don't lose everything. And they didn't quite detail what you do lose or don't lose. But I think that's interesting as well, because there's a chance to just get rolled in this game. And that's brutal, especially in the fall. Could you imagine you're 100 hours into Fallout 4?
So he just nukes you.
Yeah.
You don't even have any warning. You just all of a sudden you just explode. Everything you've ever cared for explodes. Well, we'll find out more. I mean, that game is a classic Bethesda Beyonce drop where, you know, you didn't know about it 3 months ago. Now you both know about it and it's coming out this year. So I love it.
Lied to us.
Yep. In November.
I love that they do that.
They gave us that 2019 date first, right? And then yeah. They're like, just kidding.
Yeah. Love it. I love that this company does that all the time, but that wasn't the end of the crazy surprises. Elder Scrolls Blades. What? Full Elder Scrolls game, full giant open world role-playing game made for mobile with touch controls in mind, made to be able to be played both landscaped and portrait mode on your phone. Looks better than any Elder Scrolls game you can play on console or PC now. I mean, the gorgeous looking game. I just was blown away by the visuals alone, but made for mobile. Although they said it should be coming to all conceivable consoles and PC, and it's coming to VR, a full Elder Scrolls game coming to VR. What? This was, to me, one of the biggest surprises of E3 so far. I just can't believe it. I'm not excited about playing a game on a touchscreen like this, but because they say it's coming to all these other devices, including VR, I'm in for Elder Scrolls Blades. What about you, Sharif?
I think it looks phenomenal. You know, I think it's definitely an achievement for, like, mobile gaming. Now, they made a big thing to mention that they were running it on an iPhone 10.
Yeah.
So I'm really curious as to what kind of phone you will need.
Yeah, what's the minimum? It's out, a 10 is a minimum.
Exactly. I don't think my 6S will probably be able to play that.
Yeah.
But no, it's definitely a big achievement. But I don't know how well a game like that will translate off of a phone. It looks very simple.
Yeah, the combat looks like you're sort of locked into an enemy and you know, you have to deal with them. I don't know, but maybe that may work very well in VR, for example. So I don't know. It's going to be.
Well, no. I think in VR, I think it can work. But if they're saying that it's coming like everywhere else just as a game.
Yeah.
I mean, be free.
Could be. It is going to be free, right? It's going to be free. That's crazy.
I know it'll be free on the phone. Yes.
Yeah.
Who knows what else they'll have in there. When you go in there, it's like, hey, do you really want that helmet?
yeah. Right. Yeah. Horse armor.
You want that horse armor?
Yeah.
Right.
And that was not the end. I was sitting next to Taramina and we were both like, they can't end on a mobile game, right? They can't end this on a mobile game. And of course they didn't. They showed some logos, guys, logos. Never been more excited to see logos in my life. You know, even more than the Metroid logo last year. This blew my skirt up in a big, big way. Starfield is real. It's the long rumored next big Bethesda Game Studios RPG. Don't know anything about it. It did look like a hopeful future kind of setting. We saw a logo. And we heard that it's the next game that they're coming out with. We have no idea when. It sounds like several years away. But that wasn't even enough. We saw the game they're working on after that one. Todd Howard was very clear to say after that one, Elder Scrolls 6. And we saw just sort of a bird's eye flight across very beautiful landscape and then the Elder Scrolls 6 logo. Here's my take on this, guys. As Twitter-pated and ecstatic as I was to see these things, get confirmation of Starfield, confirmation of Elder Scrolls 6, there was no doubt that they were working on the next Elder Scrolls. There's no doubt in anybody's mind. But to see it happen, to know that it's coming eventually, to know that it's going to be this big next-gen experience, all of that, very, very thrilling, a cool moment. But to what end? Like, what have they wrought by doing this? There's not going to be a moment in the next however many years it takes to get these games out where the question on everybody's lips is, when's Starfield? When's Elder Scrolls 6? Now that you've confirmed them and you're talking about them, that's all anybody cares about from you. I don't understand how giving us a cool moment this year serves them. I think it complicates. If Starfield and Elder Scrolls 6 seem like multiple years away. If Starfield isn't next year's game, it overshadows everything they will talk about from now until the release of those games. And I feel like they have had such a wonderful template of waiting and only talking about things when they're about to be released. I don't understand why they would do this, even though it gave me a real cool moment. What do you think, Sharif?
I think it's to give you that cool moment. I think like the fact that, you know, we're talking about it right now, that's what they did it for. And I also think they've probably been getting just completely hammered over the years on this.
Yeah.
You know, I don't mind it, you know, they're, you know, like they just ended on it. It was like forever. It was like really fast. It was like kind of like a just to know that we're thinking of you. It was kind of like, you know, as you said before, like the Metroid Prime 4 kind of thing, you know, like I'm, it's just like,
we got you.
Hey,
yeah.
Hey, yeah, exactly. And then, you know, I'm fine with that.
What do you think, Christian?
Yeah, I think we've been here before. We'll be here again. Metroid's a great example. I mean, Battletoads was just, you know, that's probably closer than Starfield, certainly. But Cyberpunk, you know, when did we first see that? 2-3 years ago? And that's still several years off. I think there's some just telling our fans, and then I think some is to our investors, you know, like, these are real. We're making them. This is our timeline. And I don't know if it'll overshadow everything they have coming, because kind of what they have coming, it seems like, are very different games. And if 76 works, I think it can be huge for them in a different way. And if their mobile game works, you know, they mentioned, we talked about this before we started streaming, I think, that they talked about how many people have downloaded Fallout Shelter.
Yeah, more than all their other games combined.
Yeah, and now if they're releasing and, you know, they have an Elder Scrolls game coming free to mobile like that, they've won, you know, like...
Yeah.
So I don't think it will overshadow the conversation. I think people were going to ask them about these anyway. And so now to say that they're out and we'll be talking about them, we're not talking about them until next year, I think it's almost easier than leaks and this, that, and the other. We've heard it's called Starfield. What do you have to say about that? Blah, 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 blah. And it was a heck of a way to end a press conference, that's for sure. And now Todd gets to go back to his, forever young chamber for three more years until they bring him out.
I honestly thought that the conference or the press conference wasn't particularly strong up until Todd Howard walked out on that stage. Everything up until that point felt very samey to me. It felt like, you know, all of the same tempo and level of aggression. It was all of these very intense shootery moments. I mean, even Prey, it was like intense, quick cut, action, smash, smash, big explosions, kind of aggressive shooter pace, you know? And then Todd Howard comes out on stage and he just charmed the pants off of everybody, talks about games that seem so interesting and so exciting and so full of hope that I came away like, I love this company. I truly love this company. Even though up to that point, it felt like this company just makes really aggressive bro shooters, you know, and I just completely changed my mind on it. So it all goes to the power of a charismatic, I think he's sort of the Steve Jobs of video games. I think he Todd Howard can, you know, sell, what do they say, an ice cube to an Eskimo or whatever it is. You know, it's like, he's really wonderful when he presents a game. He's like, yeah, that's something I want to do and play and be a part of. It's great.
Yeah, I agree. I thought he was amazing. And you know, he's not only somebody that's been around for a while, but he still kind of is really passionate about what he does.
Yeah.
You know, and like can show it, you know, it's like kind of really evident, and he just felt like he was in his zone.
Yeah,
you
know? For sure.
And like it was good to see.
Yeah, he is great. And I think, again, speaking from just a presentation standpoint, I think Microsoft has had the best presentation so far in terms of rhythm and pace and top to bottom, start to finish, how things went. I thought Bethesda's press conference of doing that catwalk where half the time the presenter was not looking at half the audience felt weird. I think presenters felt weird. I think Todd didn't care. And like watching at home, you could tell he acknowledged the room and you could see like the live stream cameras were like, oh crap. Like Todd's not on his mark. Kind of chasing to follow him, it seemed like. But, as a presentation, as a spectacle, I would put them so far as Microsoft, Bethesda, EA.
I would agree with that. Is that what you would say, Sharif?
I would put Bethesda first.
Oh, interesting.
Then Microsoft in here.
Fair enough. Well, we got lots more. We'll be back tomorrow night talking about even more press conferences. We've got Ubisoft, the PC press conference, Square Enix, and Sony will close out the night. And I will be up late again. Christian and I will be here. We'll be joined, I believe, tomorrow night by Scott Johnson. We'll be talking about those press conferences, so stay tuned. But in the meantime, Sharif Jackson, thank you so much for being here, sir.
Thanks. I apologize for the late arrival, but thanks for squeezing me in.
Oh, no. Thank you so much for staying up late with us. I know it's not easy. Tell people where they can keep up with you and what you do online.
Sure. So my website is sharifjackson.com, S-H-A-R-E-E-F, jackson.com. That'll link you to the Spawn on Me podcast, which I co-host with Khalif Adams, Cicero Holmes, and Tanya DePass. It'll link you to my Twitch page, to my YouTube page, where I put up videos on diversity and gaming. And it will also link you to my brand new Dungeons & Dragons group called the Rivals of Waterdeep.
Nice.
Which we debuted in L.A. last weekend, in which we will begin streaming our games on June 17th on D&D's Twitch channel. So
excellent. Super excited. Congrats. About that
as well.
That's great. So,
yeah. Check it all out there.
Cool. Christian, you are at Spicer.
on Twitter. It's the best way to get my hashtag E3 fashion tweets. All yeah, E3. They've already started. You can jump on that hashtag train. If someone for real, give me that show already. That's the best way to keep in touch. And then I have ALTMM. You can find it out first to patrons on Tuesdays. Patreon.com/Christian Spicer, and then everybody else on the Uninformed Opinions feed on Fridays. Yeah.
And I'm at Jeff Cannata. That's with two N's and one T. I am live streaming all of the stuff and everything I can. Big week. Again, we'll be back tomorrow night. Thanks for hanging out with us. I'm going to go get some sleep, Casper style. We'll see you guys tomorrow. Enjoy E3. Bye.
Later.
You just realized your business needed to hire someone yesterday. How can you find amazing candidates fast? Easy. Just use Indeed. Stop struggling to get your job posts seen on other job sites. With Indeed sponsored jobs, your post jumps to the top of the page for your relevant candidates, so you can reach the people you want faster. According to Indeed data, sponsored jobs posted directly on Indeed have 45% more applications than non-sponsored jobs. Don't wait any longer. Speed up your hiring right now with Indeed. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/PODKATZ12. Just go to Indeed.com/PODKATZ12 right now and support our show by saying you heard about Indeed on this podcast. Terms and conditions apply. Hiring? Indeed is all you need.